Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call on this Saturday morning, May 16th, 2009. Taking you to the bottom half of the 11 o'clock hour, 11:30. We have a special hour and a half to do program for you because we're looking ahead to today's Preakness Stakes down in Baltimore, Pimlico State Race Course, Pimlico Race Course, and Rachel Alexander. I mean, that seems to be, she seems to be the show horse, the horse that everybody's been talking about. She's the odds-on favorite, morning line favorite at 8-5. And then more importantly, she's a filly. This is what you have to love about horse racing. You have a horse. Not too many sports have a storyline like this. You have a horse whose rider, Calvin Burrell, won the Kentucky Derby riding the bird. He said, "You know what? I'm going back to my original horse, my first love, Rachel Alexander." I mean, where else could you get that? Here's a guy who gives up an opportunity to win a Triple Crown. And says, "You know, I'm going to go back to Rachel Alexander." You know why? Because she's the better horse. And universally regarded, she is considered to be the best horse of the field, but she certainly has history against her. Not too many fillies win these Triple Crown races. 110 fillies have entered a Triple Crown race. Only 10 have won. Only 10. And a filly has not won the Preakness since going back to 1924. So, again, this is what you love about the sport. I mean, it's almost similar to a Triple Crown. I mean, you know, last year you had Big Brown, who was going for a Triple Crown win down at Belmont. He had history going against him. You saw what happened there. Rachel Alexander, of course, has history going against her. Amongst the challengers, of course, Mind the Bird comes in as a third favorite at 6-1. You have Pioneer and Pioneer of the Nile that comes in at 5-1. It's gonna be an interesting race because I want to see. Obviously, I saw what Rachel Alexander did at the Kentucky Oaks. I mean, she destroyed the competition, but that's the Kentucky Oaks. I mean, she's going up against now a higher level of competition, a higher, and this is, you know, I mean, this is the Preakness. But I want to see mind that bird. I call it Mind the Bird. Mind that bird. Coming off that just crazy Kentucky Derby. I mean, you're talking about a horse that came back that basically went past about 18 horses in about 21. Went past 18 horses and left everybody just standing still, won by six lengths. A lot of people think it was a fluke. I'm not sure. I mean, the way he won that race. And, I mean, he looked pretty legitimate to me. And a lot of people don't think he's a Triple Crown horse. I'm not saying he would have to win this race to prove to me that he could possibly be a Triple Crown horse, but I wouldn't totally dismiss Mind That Bird. And that is, you listen to reports, it seems that there's going to be a race between Richard Alexander and Mind That Bird. Mind That Bird will be ridden by Mike Smith, who replaces Calvin Burrell as he goes back to Richard Alexander. So it seems like those are the two horses that are going to decide the race. A couple other horses certainly to keep your eye on. Like I already mentioned, Pioneer of the Nile. You have Take the Points, who was out of the Kentucky Derby with an injury. He's back into the Triple Crown mix, the Triple Crown races. You have also Flying Private, Freezer. You have Freezer Fire, is at 6-1. You have General Quarters. Really, I mean, this field is not. I mean, it's not as strong as I thought it would be, considering some of the horses that were left out of the Kentucky Derby, that were out of Kentucky Derby. Now, quality. I want revenge. Obviously, physically can't. Will not be in the race, but I was wanting to see what Quality Road, if Quality Road was going to join, was going to get back into the mix. We'll certainly ask Alex Brown, who will join us probably somewhere around 10:15 or so, who will join me probably around 10:15 or so to talk about this. because there are a lot of horses. There are a lot of horses that were out of that Kentucky Derby who were big time horses. I mean, I'm talking like Pamplemousse, and Pamplemousse was one of those horses. Of course, we already talked about Quality Road, but it seems like it's going to come down to again Rachel Alexander, and also and Mind That Bird. This track, of course, is a little bit shorter than the Kentucky Derby. It's 1 3/16 of a mile. Again, beautiful track. I'm definitely going to be looking forward to it. Again, Rachel Alexander is coming in on a hot streak. I mean, she won the Kentucky Oaks. She wins the Kentucky Oaks by over 20 lengths. I mean, it wasn't a horse near her, and she's won 5 straight races. But I'm always worrisome. I mean, horse race, I'm always worrisome of a horse, you know, going up against history, basically. I mean, there's a reason why you haven't seen too many fillies win these races. And she is the clear-cut favorite. She's absolutely the clear-cut favorite in this race. So I'll be we'll definitely be looking forward to that. Again, Alex Brown will join us in the next 10 minutes or so to kind of break down this race and also recap. They'll get a little recap of that out with the Kentucky Derby a couple of weeks ago, which, you know, is one of the craziest finishes. This is one of the craziest races I've ever seen in my life. One of the best derbies I've ever seen, considering, you know, where Mind That Bird came from. I mean, he was a 50-1 long shot to win the race. I didn't hear anybody. I mean, I didn't hear anybody talking about him before that race. So he turns out shocks the world and wins that race and comes in as a pretty might. He comes in, I mean, 6-1 odds. 6-1 odds. And I mean, there are a couple of people that I saw that picked him to win this race. So I would not be shocked or surprised at all if he won this race. I mean, it wouldn't shock me to say the least. It wouldn't shock me to say at least if he won this race, because he has because the way he won the Kentucky Derby, it wasn't like he won by a nose. It was not like he won by a nose. He pretty much smoked his competition. Once he came up on the rail, and just blew everybody away. And to come from that far back was just amazing. Again, you figure how far he came back would have won by a nose, but you think that if he would have been even with all the other horses, that he might have won by 15 or 20 lengths. So we'll be keeping an eye on Mind That Bird and Rachel Alexander. It will be definitely exciting. And how ironic would it be if it did come down to those two horses? I mean, you're talking about a great storyline. That would be tremendous if those two horses were battling out for the finish and trying to win a Preakness Stakes. And how about Mind That Bird wins this race? Now, how do you feel? If you're Calvin Burrell, how do you feel if Mind That Bird wins this race and you have a horse that will be one race away from horse racing immortality in terms of winning a Triple Crown, and you chose to leave that horse and get to ride Rachel Alexander? Now, nobody's criticizing Burrell for going back to Rachel Alexander. I mean, that was his original horse. You really can't knock him too much on it, considering that it was his original horse. And bottom line is Rachel Alexander is considered to be, you know, right now, you know, one of the best horses in the world. I mean, right now, she's won 5 straight races, and she's won them. These races have not been close. So hard to criticize. Hard to criticize Burrell for making that move, He said, now listen, he said, I mean, he said beforehand that if it came down between Mind That Bird and himself and Rich Alexander, that he would ride Rich Alexander. So it comes to no shock at all that he made that switch. Again, I find it, you know, for me, if I'm him, I might have to stay with Mind That Bird. You know, it's one thing if you don't win the Kentucky Derby, you have a chance to win. You have a chance to win a Triple Crown. So I'm definitely looking forward to it. It'll be in Baltimore. Always one of the biggest events in the state of Maryland. This thing is, the Preakness down here is huge. Huge. I mean, all you heard, all the talk around the state was about this race and about Rachel Alexander and about Mind That Bird and about the rivalry between Baffert and Dwayne Lucas, and that's all you heard over the course of the week, so we'll be looking forward to that. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, Game 7. One Game 7 we thought we might see, the other one we didn't think, I don't think anybody thought they would see. Both the NBA has a dream, absolutely dream. You have Celtics and Lakers with their playoff lives on the line. Last year's two NBA finalists will both be hosting Game 7. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that, and we also talk about why the NHL is on its way back. There's been a great playoff for the hockey, and they seem to be on the climb back to being relevant again. We'll talk about that. And much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Again, Alex Brown should be coming on soon enough to preview this Preakness race. We'll be right back. Wayman Tisdale has passed away at the age of 44. Tisdale was a three-time All-American at Oklahoma, played 12 years in the NBA, where he played Indiana, Sacramento, Phoenix, averaging 15 points a game. He also became a well-known jazz musician. Tisdale, of course, had his leg amputated a few months ago, and has passed away at the age of 44. American League scores: Detroit smashes Oakland 14-1. New York gets by Minnesota 5-4. Melky Cabrera has a game with a single. Toronto all over Chicago 8-3. Tampa Bay was down 7-0 against Cleveland, but rallied and was capped off by a B.J. Upton game home run to win 8-7. Texas over the Angels 10-8. Ian Kinsler hits two home runs. Kansas City knocks off Baltimore 8-1. Zach Greinke improves to 7-1 on the season. National League: Philadelphia over Washington 10-6 in 12 innings. Ryan Howard hits his seventh home run of the season. Colorado 3-1 over Pittsburgh. The Dodgers get by Florida 6-4. Casey Blake hits his eighth home run of the season. Atlanta over Arizona 4-3. Chipper Jones hits his fourth home run of the season. San Diego gets by Cincy 5-3. Adrian Gonzalez, major league leading 15th home run of the season. And the Giants and the Mets continue to play well on this West Coast trip. They get by. They rallied, come back from four runs down to beat the Giants 8-6. Of course, tomorrow you will be seeing the NBA has two Game 7s. If you're in the NBA, you have to certainly be excited and nervous at the same time. First of all, listen, anytime you can get Celtics-Lakers hosting Game 7s on a Sunday, you have to love it if you're in the NBA. From an entertainment standpoint, the Lakers Rockets game 6 on Thursday night, and I was surprised when I heard about this. It was the highest rated cable television game of all time, since ESPN has been doing games. you know, since ESPN has been doing games. I was surprised to hear about that. Thursday night, especially with all the season finales that were on Thursday night. I know there are a lot of Grey's Anatomy fans out there who certainly were watching that particular episode. But they did a big number and watched the Rockets come, you know, smack the Lakers around and come back and tie that series. And two different teams going in seemingly two different directions in regards to the Lakers and Celtics. And, you know, when you watch these two teams play, because they're always going to be intertwined from here on, I mean, forever. I mean, they're two biggest franchises in the NBA, the two most storied franchises in terms of championships and history in the NBA. And, they met last year in the NBA Finals where the Celtics, you know, overwhelmed the Lakers. And in these playoffs, you're seeing more and more why the Celtics beat the Lakers. I mean, here you have it. The Celtics come into the playoffs with no Kevin Garnett. Leon Poole gets injured, tears up his knee. He's done. I mean, you're going with guys. I mean, you got Brian Scalabrine in your lineup. And they've been great throughout the playoffs. I mean, the Celtics have really, I mean, the Celtics showing you why they won a championship. They get by Chicago, the tough series, and against Orlando, against a team that probably has better all-around talent. They've taken them to the distance. It could have ended the series in Game 6. I was surprised that the Celtics, having an 8 or 9 point lead in the third quarter, didn't end that series. I really thought Orlando was on the ropes and was done at that point. But Orlando had a big fourth quarter. Celtics could not score in the fourth quarter, and Orlando was able to get by Boston and force that Game 7 in Boston. But the Celtics have been great. Nobody would have criticized them had they not won a championship this year with no Kevin Garnett, who I still think, by the way, might come back. Now, I haven't heard anything about, again, not taking him off your playoff roster, him not having the surgery. Not that he would be effective if he did come back in the middle of the playoffs, towards the latter part of the playoffs, but I still think that's a possibility that he will return and play for the Celtics. But, you know, the Celtics, the Lakers had a inch of the mental toughness that the Celtics had. We'd be talking about Denver and Lakers right now. But we'd be talking about how unbeatable the Lakers are. The Lakers have played, you know, I really didn't get on them as far as the Utah series goes. They beat Utah in 5 games. Utah, again, was not a number 8 seed. But the thing that told you that something was wrong with the Lakers was last Sunday in that Game 4. I mean, you go in there Game 4, know Yao Ming, have a chance to take a stranglehold of the series. And that's it. Listen, the Lakers win Game 4, that series is over in 5, period. The series has been done. They go out there and just basically mail in the game. I mean, you would have thought the Lakers were up 3 games enough in the way they played that game. And getting embarrassed by Houston, a Houston team that doesn't have a center who started center is 6'6", in Chuck Hayes. And I've never seen anything like it. I really have never seen anything in my life like it. I've never seen a team go through the motions, coming off an embarrassing Game 6 loss last year to Boston, and play like, you know, like they're entitled, like this, like somebody, like they're entitled to something. You know, I heard somebody say that they have a little Detroit Pistons in them. And of course, you know, Detroit before this year had a run of 6 straight Eastern Conference Finals, but only made 2 NBA Finals in that period. But at least Detroit has a championship. I mean, Detroit did win a championship in 2004 and returned to the finals in 2005. Lakers, this group of Lakers hasn't won anything. I mean, Kobe Bryant had 3 championships. Derrick Fisher has 3 championships. But as a group, the Paul Gasols of the world, the Andrew Bynums, the, you know, Trevor Ariza's, those guys, Luke Walton's, whoever you want to throw into the mix, they haven't won nothing. And I'm telling you right now, I don't think Houston can come to L.A. and win a Game 7. I expect to see a similar game to what you saw in Game to what you saw in game five, I don't think this is only 40 points. That was just one of those games that just come, you know, just like an avalanche that just got out of hand and, you know, and Houston couldn't recover. No, I don't think it's going to be that bad. I feel like it's winning by, you know, 12, 14, 13 points. But if that game, I'm telling you right now, if that game is 94, 91, if that game is within a possession in the fourth quarter, Houston's going to win that game. If it's within a possession, if it's a close game, I can see the Lakers getting tight. I can see the Lakers looking up. I can see the Lakers looking at the Houston bench and saying, you know what? Tal Bing's on the bench. Tracy McGrady's on the bench. The Kemi Rotemba's on the bench. What are we doing here in the game seven with these guys? At home, 65 wins. Favorites are co-favorites along with Cleveland to win a championship. What in the world are we doing in a game seven? I can see them getting tight. It would not. If this game is close, I think Houston wins. I honestly believe that. If this game is close, I believe Houston will win this game. Again, I've never seen anything like it. It's beyond perplexing to try to figure this team out from game to game. And from a tactical standpoint, and I heard Charles Barkley bring it up on TNT, why, if you're the Los Angeles Lakers, you would come out shooting a million jump shots when you have a considerable height advantage is beyond me. Game five, they come out, they pound the ball inside, get Houston in foul trouble, and there you go. They have two seven-footers, and you're shooting jump shots. Houston, again, Chuck Hayes is 6'6". I know he has leverage. I understand he knows how to use his body, and it's hard to get good position on him. He's a great post defender, but he's still only 6'6". And Paul Gasol is 7 feet tall. The flip side of the coin is you have to give the Rockets an awful lot of credit. The Rockets have been, you know, they could have folded their tent a long time ago. Nobody picked them to win the series, even with Yao Ming. Nobody picked them to win the series. I thought it would be a six game series, a very competitive six game series. But there's no way that I thought that they would get the Lakers to a seventh game, especially with no Yao Ming. But Houston, you know, plays with a lot of energy. They play as hard as any team in the league. Adam has done a great job mixing and matching lineups. Their physicality has clearly bothered the Lakers. I mean, and it's one thing. And the flip side of the coin for the Lakers, as far as, you know, they're getting killed by the LA media, and rightfully so. If they survive this series, they're going to feel like they've been let out of a vice, because Houston's defense and their physicality has just annoyed the Lakers to no end. I mean, Kobe Bryant has seen enough of Shane Battier and Ron Artest, you know, you've seen enough of them from one series, especially Battier. Artest, I think he's comfortable with going against the Artest, because I think Artest defensively is very good, but he takes a lot of chances and does not have the discipline that Shane Battier has. Great article by Sports Illustrated on Battier guarding Kobe Bryant, and just, I mean, he's almost turned into a science. I mean, he crunches numbers in terms of where Bryant's more efficient at, where he doesn't shoot a high percentage, how many times he's going to go left. I mean, he basically, again, he's turned guarding Kobe Bryant into, like, you know, it's his obsession, basically, when he goes over this Bryant. And, you know, he says, hey, I just stay the course. He gets 40. And I really watched that matchup closely. He plays Bryant tougher than anybody. Tougher than Bruce Bowen. Tougher than, say, Eric Snow did. And Eric Snow was a very underrated defensive player. He plays Kobe Bryant tougher than anybody. Doug Christie, one of the guys you want to toss in there. He's 6'8". He doesn't take chances. He contests every shot. He contests every shot. He's able to draw charges. Battier is a first-team caliber all-defensive player. He really is. And he's done a great job on Kobe Bryant. Kobe could have had 50 or 60 in one of the games easily is not bad. It's not bad if it wasn't for Battier guarding him. This series might be over if it's not for Shane Battier. As far as Boston Orlando goes, I think Boston wins game seven, not only so much because of the home court. I mean, obviously that's a big part of it. But Boston is just, they're just more mentally tougher at this point than Orlando is. I mean, you saw Orlando, you know, you saw the whole Dwight Howard, Stan Van Gundy ordeal, Dwight Howard basically calling out Van Gundy for not getting enough touches, And he's right. He's right about that. He shouldn't have said it in the press, in the post game news conference. And he's right. He doesn't get enough touches. They do have too many guys shoot 3-pointers. At the same time, it would be nice if Dwight Howard had a better, more well-rounded offensive game. I mean, other than dunking and an occasional jump hook, he really has no offensive game to speak of. He doesn't have a 10 to 15 footer. He doesn't face up. Everything is either, like I said, dunk, half jump hook, or garbage, or getting points off offensive rebounds. If he had an offensive game, he would be just outright beyond scary. I mean, he could average 30 points a game if he had an offensive game, a polished offensive game. But I trust Boston more. I don't trust Orlando in a game seven on the road. I don't think they're at that point mentally to where they can go on somebody else's court, especially Boston, and beat the defending NBA champions. I just don't think that. I mean, I think they're good enough from a talent standpoint, but mentally, I don't think they're there right now. And again, if you're the NBA, you have to love this. I mean, had Boston, trust me, that Laker game, if it's not a blowout, if it's not a 30 or 40 point blowout, that Laker game will do big numbers as far as the ratings goes. And the Boston game, I think, will do big numbers as well, because by the time, 8 o'clock, 60 minutes will be over. I don't know if Desperate Housewives will have the season. They might even have the season finale, but how much that will have an effect on. But Sunday night, 8 o'clock, that should generate a big audience. It's not too late. It's not too late in the evening. That should be a great game. I think the Boston Orlando game is going to be a classic game. I can see that game going down to the last shot, last possession, and in close game. Look at the close games in this series. Boston has won three of the four real tight games in this series, where it's come down to execution down the stretch. That was the first game Orlando won in game six that was not a close game. The other two games they won were just flat out just blowouts. But Boston has dominated the close games in this particular series, and I would not expect that to change. As far as the other two series goes, they wouldn't have expected. Cleveland, of course, swept Atlanta. No surprise. Cleveland, again, is going to have a ton of time off before Eastern Conference Finals start. The Eastern Conference Finals, I believe, will start on Tuesday or Wednesday. I'm thinking probably Tuesday. Probably Wednesday. So Cleveland's going to have a ton of time off. Denver finished off Dallas. And thankfully that series is over. I had enough of the Mark Cuban whole Kenyon Martin ordeal, which Mark Cuban was 100% wrong on, by the way. I mean, to confront Kenyon Martin's mom. I mean, are you kidding me? First of all, you are an owner of a professional sports franchise. You gotta be above that. And then his whole apology was a joke. Man, I mean, apologizing over your blog. I mean, come on. What happened to face-to-face contact? I'm sorry. I was out of line. Mrs. Martin, in the discussion. All right, we're going to be joined now by Alex Brown to look ahead towards the Preakness. We'll get back to the NBA a little bit later, but we're going to Alex Brown joins us. How you doing, Alex?
Oh, very good. I'm actually really excited about this race. I think this sets up to be a terrific horse race.
I'm right with you. First of all, before we get to this race, you have to look back at that wild Kentucky Derby. I've never seen anything like it. What were your thoughts on that, real quick, in that particular race?
It was absolutely fantastic. I mean, you know, I'm up at Woodbine, up in Canada, and I was watching the race in the track kitchen, and you know, we were watching the horses coming around the turn at the end, and I was like, oh, here comes Pioneer of the Nile, which I was kind of a little bit bummed about since I probably had no shot. But he looked like all over the winner, and then this horse, little horse, runs right up the rail and beats them all by 7 lengths and looks like he does it easily. And it turns out that it's Mind That Bird. And Mind That Bird spent his whole 2-year-old career up here at Woodbine and actually, oddly, in the same barn I was in. So, of course, I jumped on the Mind That Bird bandwagon straight away. It was fantastic. I was really excited.
Yeah, I mean, 50-1 odds. I mean, we talked on that particular Saturday and said that could be a race with all the big horses that were out of the race.
Yeah.
That could be a race for a long shot to win. But I didn't think I didn't think about Mind That Bird at all.
You had to dig deep to find that long shot, that's for sure. But I mean, that was the thing when we talked about the race. I think we basically said pick 4 long shots and have some fun. Could you have picked Mind That Bird on paper? You know, I don't think anyone's going to come out and say they really did. But, you know, his form up here at Woodbine last year wasn't too bad. He didn't do so well in the Breeders' Cup. And his 2 races at Sunderland Park, it turned out that there were some tactical issues there. So, you know what? This horse looks like he might be legitimate. So let's hope he can prove that today.
Yeah, getting to that point about Mind That Bird, is this... I mean, would you lean on more to the fact that he is a legitimate horse, or would you lean more on, hey, he had a great race, you know, one shot wonder?
Right.
So you really think he is, you really think that this is a very good horse?
Well, I can tell you the horsemen down at Pimlico obviously think it was a fluke because they're all coming back. The second horse, the third horse, the fourth horse are coming back to take a shot at him again. The 2 horses that finished last and second to last are coming back to take a shot at him again, and a couple of others. You wouldn't see this larger field in the Preakness unless the horsemen thought that they had a real good shot at beating this horse. So clearly a lot of people are thinking that Mind That Bird's race was a fluke. It was a bad racetrack. The race set up perfect for him. I'm not so sure myself it was a fluke. I thought... the horse did a terrific job, and he won by 7 lengths. They get up and win by a head in a hard-fought race. He won by 7 lengths, and he just galloped by them. He ran that last 3/8 in 36. So, you know, out of all the horses that ran in the Derby, this horse comes out of the Derby best. You know, he did not have a hard race. Any horse that finished behind him had a hard race. So from that perspective, I like the guy. I think, you know, I'm a little bit biased. I'd like to see the horse run real well. I mean, it's great for all the guys up here at Woodbine and those that helped develop this horse who are all, you know, they're friends of mine. So I'm a bit biased, but I do think he comes out of the race good. I'm hoping it wasn't a fluke, but it looks like a lot of the horsemen think it was a fluke.
Talk about, obviously, the big story in this whole race is Rachel Alexander and the whole Calvin Burrell, that ordeal. I shouldn't even say ordeal, but
right.
Talk about that for a second. I mean, Calvin Burrell, now, it's no shock that he went back to Rachel Alexander. He said beforehand if he had to choose between those 2 horses that he would ride Rachel Alexander. But this is a unique situation because this has never been done before, that a jockey has left a Kentucky Derby winner and rode a different horse in the Preakness.
Right.
Do you think it was an easy decision for him, or do you think that he just feels that Rachel Alexander is clearly just a better horse than, say, Mind That Bird?
Right. I mean, full disclosure, I work for Steve Asmussen, right? So I'm excited that Calvin's riding Rachel Alexandra. And, you know, Jess Jackson and partner bought Rachel Alexandra shortly after the Oaks. And we talked when I was on the show last time about what a performance Rachel Alexandra put in the Oaks. And in fact, she might well be the best 3-year-old in the country, even though she wasn't running in the Derby. So clearly, that wasn't just something that I thought. That was conventional wisdom. She was bought. She was pointed for the Oaks. for the Preakness, and Calvin had to make a choice. Now, Calvin had only ridden Mind That Bird twice, once in the Derby and once in a work before the Derby, so he really didn't have a relationship with the horse. He has ridden Rachel Alexandra to three or four consecutive victories, I forget right now, and he's worked her a bunch of times, and he has a relationship with her, and he clearly thinks that Rachel Alexandra is a freak kind of racehorse. So I'm absolutely not surprised with his decision. And he had made it clear earlier that he's sticking with Rachel Alexandra come hell or high water. So whilst the decision appears unconventional, I think the decision is the right decision. And I even wrote about that for some work that I do with the New York Times, right? So I think it's the right decision. And I really hope that Rachel Alexandra proves today that she is a phenom. And, you know, I really hope that Mind That Bird just comes up a little bit short and finishes second. I really think she's a terrific racehorse. And, you know, today she just needs to run her race maybe to get the job done.
It would be, I mean, obviously Rachel Alexandra is the favorite, but if Mind That Bird ever won this race, it would be... You would have great buzz going into the Belmont, but secondly,
yeah,
that would be, it would just be very ironic if Rachel, if Mind That Bird won this race.
And the race will set up for Mind That Bird, because we will have some speed up front, right? You'll have Big Drama, you'll have a couple of others, Rachel will be stalking quite close, so it won't be a slowly run race. So if you like Mind That Bird, don't worry that it's a 16th of a mile shorter. A 16th of a mile shorter in the Derby, he was still in front, so... you're going to see a fast run race, so it will suit the little horse.
Yeah, so yeah, talk about that for a second. This track is a little bit, obviously a little bit shorter than what the Derby is. Does that make it more important to get off to a fast start?
I don't think it really makes that much of a difference. But Mind That Bird doesn't need to get off to a fast start, right? In the Derby, he was actually squeezed coming out of the gate, and many say that might have actually helped him because Calvin had to take back. And, you know, any of you that have watched the rerun of the race will see how far back he was going into the first turn. I mean, it was amazing to see that. So I don't think the Preakness is all that much different. And, you know, our camp chose a 13-hole for Rachel Alexandra because they really didn't think it was that necessary to sort of, you know, there's a long run to the first turn. I mean, everything should work out well. What's interesting in this Preakness is it is a large field for a Preakness, 13 horses, and you may get a little bit of traffic trouble, but I would imagine it'll be a pretty evenly run race.
Okay, talk about what happened to some of these other horses that were out of the Derby, that were either injured or just chose not to run a Derby. Now, the only horse I saw that was taken out that's in this race is Take the Points. What happened to horses? I know I Want Revenge is injured, but what happened to horses like Quality Road, Temple Moose?
Yeah, I mean, I can give you a quick rundown. I mean, Quality Road is going to be out for a while, at least. You know, the Pample Moose. I mean, all these horses, there's really no fixed plan for them to re-enter the fray at this point. And, you know, obviously that's a shame. I think the horses that we have running, though, with Rachel Alexandra in the field, we've got, I believe, the best three-year-old in the country right now running. And with Mind That Bird in the field, we've got the Kentucky Derby winner. So, I mean, this sets up to be a great race. I mean, second, third, and fourth in the Derby are running Pioneer of the Nile, and Musket Man, and Papa Clam. It looks like it'll be a good race. And you know, I think, you know, the favorite for the Derby, Frisian Fire, he's coming back in. He only beat one. He grabbed a quarter in the race, but he put in a bullet work a few days ago, kind of typical Larry Jones bullet work. So, I mean, obviously they think their horse is back to proving that he's a good horse. So you've got a lot of really good options here, I think.
Yeah, give me a quick rundown of some of these horses. I've heard a lot of talk about Big Drama and Terrain.
Big Drama, lots of speed. He's never gone a mile in 3/16 or close to this distance. I think his longest race was a mile 16. You'll see him on the front or close to the front early, and if he can get the trip, he's going to be a danger for sure. You've got Musket Man was third in the Derby. He looks like he's going to come back and probably run a pretty decent race. Dwayne Lucas has got two horses in the race. A horse that broke his maiden on Derby Day, Love Gov, and he's bringing back the horse Flying Private that finished last in the Derby. So whilst Dwayne Lucas's record stands for itself, I'm not sure that today will be his day. Frisian Fire, Larry Jones's horse, is coming back into the race. He was favourite for the Derby, probably a legitimate favourite. He had some trouble running, hurt himself a little bit. Apparently he's fully recovered, put in a bullet work. I'm just not sure. He beat one in the Derby. I'm not sure he can recover this quickly, put in a bullet work and be real fresh for today. So I wouldn't be picking him personally. Terrain, I think he's a little lightly raced. I wouldn't be that excited about him right now. Papa Clam is coming out of the Derby. He was fourth in the Derby. He had a bit of a troubled trip. He's worked twice since, a slow 5/8, and then he worked an eighth of a mile yesterday in 10 seconds. Some unorthodox training there, and I just don't know if he'll come back as a tired horse or not. General Quarters was 10th in the Derby. Personally, I think he probably should have opted out of the Preakness, but he's going. They must like him. But I wouldn't be jumping on his bandwagon. Pioneer of the Nile, this race will suit him a little bit better than the Derby, perhaps. He ran second in the Derby, so you have to respect him. He'll be second or third choice, probably around the same betting choice as Mind That Bird. But you have to say Mind That Bird beat him handily in the Derby, so we'll see. Take the Points, Pletcher's horse. Lightly raced. He didn't run him in the Derby. I presume he didn't run him in the Derby because he ran two or three others, right? So I'm just presuming this wasn't the one for him and perhaps isn't. You know, maybe he could be a long shot to bet just because he's Pletcher's.
How about that?
And the other one was Tone It, Take It Down, Tune It Down, Tone It Down. I can't remember. Third in the Fred Tizio Stakes, which is a Preakness prep in Maryland, and I think if you finish third in it, you probably shouldn't be running in the Preakness, but there you go. Rachel Alexandra is clearly my pick over Mind That Bird.
How about Pine in the Nile? And I heard this, I forgot where I heard it from. I believe it was one of your colleagues mentioned this. I don't know if it was Joe Drake, about the speed issue that Pine in the Nile has. Talk about that for a second.
Well, he's never really run strong numbers. In California, his numbers weren't great, but he was winning, and he was beating horses that left California and won races. So if you're strictly a guy that handicaps off the numbers, you probably don't play Pioneer of the Nile. But how can you toss out a horse that won consecutive races on the Poly? My concern was his inability or no proof that he'll run on the dirt. Well, he finished second in the Derby, so he proved that he can run on a bad dirt racetrack anyway. So I'm less of a numbers guy, so now that I've seen him run a decent race on a bad dirt racetrack, I'd be like, you know, if you like him, you got to play him. I think he is legitimate, and you cannot discount Bob Baffert. He knows how to win these races.
Yeah, he's one of his share of them.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I'm sure you understand the history in regards to these fillies running Triple Crown races. I gave the number, you know, before you were on. 110 have run, only 10 have won Triple Crown races all time.
Right.
What makes, you know, Rachel Alexandra different, and number one, and number two, why is it so hard for a filly to win these races? What makes it so hard for a filly to win these races?
I don't think many fillies have tried to win these races, right? So, I mean, you know the numbers better than me. So what makes it hard? I mean, these races, these are the cream of the crop. Running a filly against the boys is tough. Running a filly against the boys this early in their three-year-old career probably is a little bit tougher. Later in their three-year-old and four-year-old careers, not so much of a difference, I don't think. But at this stage of their career, maybe so. Rachel Alexandra, I mean, I visited her when I was at Oaklawn Park, and I watched her run, I watched her breeze. She is a freak. And if you call a horse a freak, that's a good thing. It's not like calling
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, that is a good thing.
She really is a freak. And my buddy Dominic Terry, he gallops her now that she's with us at Steve's. And he's never been on a horse like her. He's told me that. And he's been on some great horses. I think everybody that's been around her is just in awe of her. So, she, you know, all things point that she can get this job done. She's 8-5 morning line favourite, so everybody's respecting this filly. The way she won the Oaks by 20 1/4 lengths, she was not even asked, and it was in a pretty decent time too. It was a freak performance. So she looks to me like she can get the job done. Now, others would criticise, well, she only ran 2 weeks ago. That's going to be particularly hard on the filly. And while I'm a believer in spacing races out a little bit more, she really didn't even run in the Oaks. She won so easily. So, you know, she wasn't really in a horse race. She won the race with sublime ease. I don't think coming back 2 weeks later should be a problem at all.
No, because conditioning won't be an issue, you don't believe.
I don't think it should be an issue at all. I think the filly, I'm hoping she proves today that she is what she's sort of signaled to everybody that's been around her. And that includes, obviously, Hal Wiggins' crew that had the filly. I mean, they thought the world of her for sure. So this, she looks like she could be any kind of racehorse. And we as an industry need these types of horses to get fans excited.
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm really hoping that she can prove that and she gets campaigned and the chance to prove that she is the best. There is another fairly out on the West Coast, Zenyatta. She's brilliant. And if these two ever meet and they're at the top of their game, then we will see a horse race.
Now, you saw the Kentucky Derby with what Burrell did. And he perfected, I mean, he's had a reputation of doing this particular strategy and where he drops back and hugs the rail, and he took it to the art form in the Kentucky Derby. How will his strategy change now that he's on Rachel Alexandra?
He will absolutely not do that, because I don't think he'll be capable of doing it, because Rachel will drag his butt right to the front if he tried it. My guess, and I don't know anything that anyone else, you know, I don't have any insight just because I work for Steve, but my guess is they'll break out the gate, she'll she's in the 13 hole, she'll sort of coast towards the rail, sit 3 or 4 paths wide and sit in about third or fourth spot, about 2 or 3 lengths off the pace. Now, I could be wrong, but that seems to be like her running style, just off the pace, stalking, and then, you know, the 3/8 pole or the half mile pole, shake her up and see what you got. So it'll be a completely different ride that Calvin gave Mind That Bird. Now, Mike Smith on Mind That Bird will probably try to simulate exactly what Calvin did 2 weeks ago. And Mike Smith's well capable of doing that.
Where do you rate her in terms of Rachel Alexandra as far as, and I'm thinking in recent memory, I'm comparing a horse to say like War Emblem, Silver Charm, Big Brown, Smarty Jones, some of the horses that have won multiple Triple Crown races but not quite won the Triple Crown, of course. What does she compare to recent memory with some of these other horses?
Right. I mean, I think the first thing she has to do is win a Triple Crown race.
Right.
I mean, she's only, well, I say only, but she's only beaten horses in her own division with her 3-year-old fillies, right? So, you know, we can at this point anoint her the best until she's run against the best and beaten them. That's what the opportunity she's been provided today. Now, having said that, her performance in the Oaks last a couple of weeks ago was the best performance I've ever seen in terms of a horse dominating a grade one or a graded stakes race. It was absolutely the best performance I've ever seen. Now, I didn't see Secretariat winning the Belmont. Now, I've seen film of it, so that's fine. But I don't count that because I didn't actually see it as it was being run. But for any horse race that I've seen being run, her performance in the Oaks was the best I've ever seen. And I've heard many other people say the same thing. Today just gives her the opportunity now to see if she can actually beat the best. And if she can do that, then she's going to be ranked right up there, I think.
Well, obviously you can't compare because she hasn't won. Like you said, yes, she hasn't won a Triple Crown race, but as far as her talent, is her talent on par with the talent of those particular horses, recent horses?
I think those that have been around that will tell you that that they've probably not been around a horse as talented. So, I mean, you know who's around her now is, you know, Steve Asmussen. They've been around some pretty high caliber horses, so. You know, the thinking right now is this is as good a horse as there is. We need to see that this afternoon.
Well, again, I'm looking forward to it. I hope it's a showdown between her, Rachel Alexander and Mind That Burn. That would be, to me, just classic.
Well,
and then
what I'm hoping is Rachel Alexander pulls about four or five lengths clear at the eighth pole. And then Mind That Bird comes charging down the lane with a late run. I'm hoping Rachel holds on, but you know what? If that is the exacta, top or bottom, I'd be thrilled. I mean, both horses, it would be absolutely terrific, a terrific race to watch. I think it'd be terrific for horse racing.
What would have to happen? Obviously, anything can happen in these races. We've seen this many times before, but it sounds to me like if she runs her race, then she would, then she's going to win. What would have to happen for her? What would have to happen for her not to win this race? Would Cal Moreau have to do something technically wrong, or would just another horse just have to have just as the absolute race of his life? Give me a scenario that she doesn't win this race. Not to win this race.
I mean, she would have to, one, run a subpar race.
Okay.
So she would have to be not feeling on top of her game for whatever reason. And, you know, these are animals, so we can't, it's not like a machine where you can absolutely predict how they're going to be on the day and on the hour and on the minute, right?
Right.
So there is a small possibility that she runs a subpar race. If she doesn't run a subpar race and she's feeling on top of her game, and all signals point to the fact that she is feeling on top of her game, then I think Calvin is almost quoted as saying he'd have to fall off.
Better
than anybody. So
he did say that.
Yeah, let's take it to the source, right? Why ask some dude up at Woodbine to speculate when Calvin Burrell himself said he'd have to fall off to get beat? So,
yeah, I'm always worrisome of, like, you know, I did go watch that YouTube clip of her at the Kentucky Oaks, and it was, like you said, it was just an off the wall performance. But I'm always nervous about these horses that people say can't lose, per se. I mean, I've seen it so many times before.
Yeah,
with Big Brown and Smarty Jones, all I heard is these horses can't lose, this horse can't lose, and this is a great horse, and I'm always, and it gets me a little nervous about that particular horse when people just assume.
I'll tell you one thing that would be a little bit of a concern is this filly, maybe when she was two, because she did get beat a couple of times, but certainly not in her last, she ran a couple of races in Arkansas, a race in Louisiana, and then she won the Oaks. So not in her last four races, she has not been put under any kind of pressure. She's won each of those races ridiculously easily, which sounds great. But sometimes it's good for a horse to actually face a little bit of pressure so that they, you know, get down and sort of then run on again. Now, today she's facing the boys for the first time. She's facing 12 horses and certainly a more talented field than she's faced in those last four races. And we don't know exactly how she'll react when she is put under a little bit of pressure. That is a little bit of the unknown, I think. My hope is she just toys with them and gallops away, but you have to be a little bit concerned about that.
Well, again, I'm looking forward to it, and hopefully three weeks from now down in, you know, at the Belmont, either we'll get one of two scenarios. Either we'll get a horse that's going for a triple crown and mind that bird, or it'll be the rubber match between Rachel Alexander and mind that bird. So hopefully we get one of those two scenarios. Alex, as always, thanks for joining me. And I'll be looking forward to talking to you a few weeks from now to preview the look at the Belmont.
I look forward to it too. And if we get that one of those two scenarios, I'll be absolutely thrilled.
Oh yeah. That'd be great for the. That definitely would be great for the sport. Alex, again, thanks for coming on. Of course, you can go to alexbrownracing.com or you can check Alex's column out at his blog out at on the rail at the New York Times. And in the New York Times. So check Alex out, and definitely if you want to know about racing, he's the guy to go to. Thanks for coming on, Alex.
I appreciate it, mate. Good luck, and I'll be back in touch.
All right. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That, of course, was Alex Brown previewing, looking at the Preakness. And, again, it sounds like Rachel Alexander is clearly the horse to beat. I'm looking forward to this race. I think that I think Mind That Bird is better than what people. I don't see her being fluked. Like, and you heard Alex mention it. You don't win a Kentucky Derby by six or seven lengths. Come back the way he came back, and it wasn't a fluke win. Again, things were going his way as far as the track being wet that day, as far as a couple of horses like Quality Road and I Want Revenge, Pamela Moves being out of the race. But he still had to go out there and come back, basically pass 18 horses and come back. And again, he didn't just win by a nose. He blew away the competition and won rather easily. So I think he's a little bit better than what people are giving him credit for. Again, Rachel Alexander, people are just, and you heard Alex say, it just seems to be a freak of nature and just seems to be one of these, the next great horse. We'll see. That's why they run these races. So we'll see how legitimate Rachel Alexander is. And again, I'm looking forward to it in the Preakness, which will, NBC's coverage will kick off about 4:30. The race will start about 6:15 or so. So check that out, and I'm again looking forward to it. Still to come, what is the NHL on its way back? I'll look at that, and also look back at the Capitals and what they need to do to get better, to get over the hump. And also we'll look at why 30 is not the new 20 in Major League Baseball, and a couple of things to look at. It's still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. 347-215-6180 is your call number. 347-215-6180 is your call number. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. 58 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour, just coming up on the top of the 11 o'clock hour. We'll be right back with the NHL and much, much more still to come on the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Wayman Tisdale has passed away at the age of 44. Tisdale was a three-time All-American at Oklahoma, played 12 years in the NBA for Indiana, Sacramento, and Phoenix. Tisdale, again, passes away at the age of 44. American League scores: Detroit all over Oakland, 14-1. The Yankees edge Minnesota 5-4. Melky Cabrera has a game-winning single. Toronto defeats Chicago. The White Sox 8-3. Tampa Bay defeats Cleveland 8-7. Tampa Bay rally from a 7-0 deficit. DJ Upton hits the game-winning home run to give the Rays the win. Texas over the Angels 10-8. Ian Kinsler hits homers twice in the contest. Kansas City all over Baltimore 8-1. Zach Greinke gets his 7th win of the season. He is now 7-1 on the seat, 7-1 this year. National League, Philadelphia over the Nationals, 10-6 in 12 innings. Ryan Howard had a home run. He had hit his seventh home run in the game. Colorado gets by Pittsburgh 3-1. The Dodgers over Florida 6-4. Casey Blake hits home run number 8. Atlanta defeats Arizona 4-3. Chipper Jones homers in the game. San Diego 5-3 over Cincinnati. Adrian Gonzalez for San Diego hits his major league leading 15th home run of the season. And the Mets defeat the Giants 8-6. Of course, the Final Four in the NHL is set. You have Pittsburgh taking on Carolina in the Eastern Conference and in the Western Conference, a old rivalry going back to way back when, Detroit against Chicago, two of the original six, and I'm sure the NHL has to love that. Listen, the NHL quietly, and a lot of that is due to their fault. It's having a great playoff round. I mean, you had these quarterfinals, you had these semifinal series, you had three game sevens, you had Detroit being pushed to the limit by a number 8 seed in Anaheim. Anaheim really played well in that series. They get down to Detroit at home, down in Detroit in game 7, 2-0, to turn the game off. The next thing you know, it's 3-3 before Detroit got a late goal to win the contest, win 4-3. Then you had, of course, Pittsburgh, and you had Alex Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby going at it as Pittsburgh was able to get past Washington in game 7, 6-2. I'll talk more about that in regards to the Capitals. I have a lot to say about that particular series, and especially about the Capitals. You know, yeah, Carolina beating Boston in overtime in Boston in a game 7. So the NHL had a lot of great action. And it's going to be a long climb back for the NHL because when you lock out, first of all, I mean, their sport was already on a decline before the lockout back in 2004, 2005. So they lock out, and then people just absolutely forget, unless you're a diehard hockey fan, people absolutely forget that the league even exists, okay? And they need these big-time matches. They need these matchups like Detroit and Chicago. You need a Pittsburgh with Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin in the conference finals. You need that to get this sport back to where it belongs. I mean, there was a time, and again, in the 80s, and I would say in the early 90s, when the NHL was a big-time sport. They were on television, on, you know, ESPN, had a contract with ESPN. You saw them on NBC. You still see them on NBC now, but once ESPN dropped them a few years back, they kind of got left lost in the weeds. I mean, now when you have playoff games on the Versus Network, it's pretty hard to follow. You know, and I know NBC does this game of the week on Saturdays and Sundays, and we'll have playoff games on the weekend. But it's, again, I mean, try finding the Versus Network. I mean, you had a situation a couple games this week where Detroit would play at 7. The game would go, you know, normal 2.5 hours, 7 to 9:30. Then the NHL would pick up the Boston Carolina game in progress at 9:30. I mean, can you imagine that in the NBA? Can you imagine that? We'll get you Boston Orlando from 8 to 10:30, and then in progress we're gonna pick up the Laker game, which probably would start at 9:30. So that's what the NHL had to do. They have to get this television situation straightened out. It's gonna be pretty hard because not too many people watch hockey. I mean, hockey is not, there's not a big audience for hockey. But I will say this, that they are, you know, going in the right direction as far as getting back, especially if you can have Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin meet year in and year out in the playoffs, with Washington being a big market and with Sidney Crosby being probably the biggest name in the sport. If you can have that, then the NHL can probably get back to where it was. I mean, when you had Detroit and Colorado going at it year in and year out, those were classic series. You had the Devils. Had the Devils, Flyers, had the Rangers all in the mix. When you had those teams going at it and being big-time teams, that's what, to me, the NHL was great. And forget about it, in the 80s, I mean, I don't think it will ever get back to that. You know, you had guys like Mario Lemieux, Wayne Gretzky, Brett Hall, those kind of players, and you had scoring at an all-time high in the 80s. I'm not sure it will get back to that level because there's just too many other things to watch television medium is entirely different. You got a million channels on it, but it can at least get back to where it was, say in the late 90s when you had some great action, some great NHL action. The Capitals, of course, went down in Game 7 to Pittsburgh 6-2, and it's no surprise Comcast Sports obviously broadcast their games, does their games, at just about every regular season game, and does most of their playoff games. They want to paint this picture as being a rosy picture. Caps have a bright future. We have Ovechkin and so on. So that's fine. And they do have a bright future. They have a lot of young talent. They certainly need to upgrade their defense as Pittsburgh was taking target practice on Varlamov during the course of that series. But to me, this is a bad loss. And it's a bad loss because, again, it's the second straight year that Washington drops a Game 7 at home. Okay. Now, home ice in hockey, more than any other sport, home ice in hockey is not that big a deal until you get to a Game 7 for the most part. And, last year, you could accept last year, the Capitals struggled to even make the playoffs last year. They kind of played their way into the playoffs, finished the season strong, but they weren't a legitimate contender last year. Nobody expected anything out of the Capitals. So you lose to a Flyer team that was scrappy, physical. Okay, you can accept that. Game 7, we're on the right track. Again, it was an overtime game at that. But to come into this series and lose Game 7 the way they did against Pittsburgh, against a Pittsburgh team, by the way, that they have just as much talent as. They have just as much talent as Pittsburgh when you go man on man, man for man, player for player. I mean, this Pittsburgh team might go on to the Stanley Cup, and they possibly could win the Stanley Cup, though I still like the Detroit Red Wings to win it for the second straight year. But this is not as talented Pittsburgh team as it was last year. You have no Marian Hossa, you have no Ryan Whitney, okay? Fleury is not as good as he was last year, though he did play well in Game 7 and set the tone with that great save he made on Ovechkin in the opening couple of minutes of Game 7. And again, if I match up Washington's players with Pittsburgh players, Washington can go toe-to-toe with Pittsburgh. The difference in this series was just, I think, the experience of Pittsburgh was probably the difference in this series. But the problem with Washington is, to me, is goaltending. I understand that Varlamov has a lot of talent. He has a ton of talent. Who knows Varlamov 10 years from now? We could be talking about Varlamov in the same vein as Martin Brodeur or Ann Belfour as the next big time goaltender. I understand that he has that kind of talent. But he's only 21 years old. I don't think you can win a Stanley Cup with a goalie unless he's just a phenom like a Patrick Waugh who won a Stanley Cup in his rookie season. And how often does that happen? I think they're going to need a veteran goaltender to come on board and carry him through. Now let me get this straight with Varlamov. I'm not blaming him for this series. He was tremendous in the playoffs. To me, the biggest indictment for Washington's team was their defense. You can't have a series where your goaltender is facing 35 to 40 shots a game. You gotta give them a little break. Their defense was awful in this series. I mean, Pittsburgh got anything they wanted in this series, and they clearly outplayed Washington. They were outshot. I mean, I forgot the final the numbers. The numbers were just staggering in terms of how bad Washington was outshot in this series. So I'm not blaming Varlamov, but I'm just saying that you have to address this. You have to address this goaltender situation before you do anything, before you deal with Fedorov, before you deal with some of the other defensemen. You have to address this goaltender situation. They need a veteran goaltender who, with some playoff experience, you could possibly win a Stanley Cup with. And if Varlamov takes his job, then so be it. If Varlamov gets that to a level where he takes his job and just takes a stranglehold of the position, then that's great. That's beautiful from a Capitals perspective. But right now, he's not ready. I mean, again, Capitals will go in next year with Stanley Cup hopes, and they'll have a great regular season. They'll get over 100 points. You know, Ovechkin will be amongst the MVP candidates again. He'll win it this year. He's going to win it again this year. He'll be amongst the leading goal scorers there. They will have a great season next year. But you know as well as I know, as the same thing in the NBA, the NHL is a postseason sport, period. And you cannot, you can have some question marks, but you cannot have a question mark at goaltender. You can't. You want to know why, Chris? You want to know why Detroit Red Wings have been great over the past decade or so? Chris Osgood, Dominique Hasek. You want to know why Colorado won those championships? Patrick Roy. You want to know why New Jersey had the kind of success they have? Martin Brodeur. Edmonton Oilers, with all the talent that Edmonton Oilers had with Gretzky and Messier and guys like Jari Kurri, and I can go on and on. They had so much talent. You know, Paul Coffey and his younger days, they had so much talent. It's ridiculous. But Grant Fuhr, they don't win those Stanley Cups without Grant Fuhr, you know, between the pipes. You have to have a goaltender who you can trust in the postseason. That's all there is to it in the NHL. And I said it before the season, not before the season, before the playoffs. I didn't think Washington was going to make it to the Stanley Cup because I didn't trust. I didn't even know about Varlamov that much and know what kind of impact he would have. But I didn't trust Jose Theodore, and lo and behold, Theodore didn't even, you know. Wasn't even a factor in the playoffs. He was off of the playoffs and didn't do anything in Game 7. And how could you expect him to do anything coming off the kind of performances that he had early on in the even going back to to Washington's last series against the Rangers? Second thing, you can't – Bruce Boudreau, everybody, if you're a Capitals fan, you obviously have to love what he's done for the team, with the team. But you can't come on post-game talking about injuries. I don't want to hear anything about injuries. This is hockey. Everybody has injuries in hockey, okay? It is one of the most physically grueling sports that there is. I don't want to hear about Mike Green I especially don't want to hear about Alex Ovechkin's injuries. Alex Ovechkin had 14 points in this series. He had 8 goals. Are you kidding me? And you're talking about his injuries? He was dying. I mean, he had a great series. I don't want to hear about him being injured. Now, we know Mike Green obviously had some problems. This was not the Mike Green that the Capitals fans and the TV that we saw over the course of the season. One of the best young defensemen in hockey. I don't want to hear about it. And don't say that, well, we're not making excuses. You are making excuses. As soon as you come out with talking about Ovechkin's injuries and Mike Green's injuries, you're making excuses. You're indirectly making excuses on why you didn't win this series. I mean, Pittsburgh had no Sergei Gonchar for the better part of the series. He's their best defenseman. So again, I don't want to hear about injuries at all. And the third thing, in regards to this whole best player in the world. We, you know, as a Capitals fan, you have to be excited about the future with Ovechkin. He's going to be, he's the best goal scorer in the world, has one of the best shots in the world. He's not the best player in the world. The best player in the world's team is playing in the Eastern Conference Finals right now. He came into the Verizon Center, scored 2 goals, had an assist in Game 7. He scored on his breakaway. When Sidney Crosby had a breakaway, and I believe it was 5-1 at this point, the game was over. He scored on his. Ovechkin had an opportunity to set the tone for the game, set the tone over a couple of minutes. The crowd was going crazy at that point. He came up short. Great save. Okay, it was a great save by Fleury. We know this. We know how athletic of a goaltender Fleury is. But the point is, he didn't score. And that would have been a huge... I mean, the opening goal at home in the Game 7 would have been enormous. Not saying that they would have won the game, because the way he played defense, Pittsburgh, they had no way of stopping Pittsburgh the way Capitals played defense that night. Crosby is the best player. So I don't want to hear any more about Alex Ovechkin being the best player. He's a great, great player. Now, let me try to minimize his skill set. That guy, he can play for my team any day of the week. He had a great series, has had a great postseason. So I'm not trying to say he's overrated or anything like that, but he's not better than Sidney Crosby. That's all there is to it. Crosby, without home ice, without arguably the better team, took his team to the Eastern Conference Finals and possibly another opportunity to win the Stanley Cup or to go to back-to-back Stanley Cup Finals. So again, I think the Capitals are headed in the right direction. They have a lot of talent coming up through their minor league system, and they should be around for a while. But they need a goaltender that they can trust. Still to come on this latest edition of Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we'll talk about why 30 is not the new 20 in baseball. You have a few guys struggling, about 30 and over. And we'll also look at some couple of things that occurred over the course of the week, some top stories over the course of the week. That's still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. 347-215-6180 is your call number. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Surreal Quinn taking you to the bottom half of the 11 o'clock hour, taking you to 11:30 on this special 90-minute edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'll be right back after this update. Raymond Tisdale has passed away at the age of 44. Tisdale was a three-time All-American at Oklahoma, averaged 15 points a game for Indiana, Sacramento, and Phoenix during his 12-year NBA career. Tisdale, again, passes away at the age of 44. American League scores, Detroit all over Oakland, 14-1. The Yankees get by Minnesota, 5-4. Toronto defeats Chicago, 8-3. Tampa edges Cleveland, 8-7. The Rays were down at by 7-0 before rallying. BJ Upton had a game-winning home run. Texas over the Angels, 10-8. Ian Kinsler hits two home runs. Kansas City over Baltimore. Get all over Baltimore, 8-1. Zach Greinke improves to 7-1 on the season. National League, Philadelphia gets by Washington in 12 innings, 10-6. Ryan Howard has a home run. Colorado, 3-1 over Pittsburgh. The Dodgers defeat Florida, 6-4. Casey Blake, home run number 8. Atlanta gets by Arizona, 4-3. San Diego over Cincinnati, 5-3. Adrian Gonzalez hits his major league leading 15th home run of the season. And the New York Mets defeat the Giants, 8-6. Of course, some news in that Boston-Seattle game. Each row had two home runs. Seattle came back to defeat Boston 5-4. David Ortiz was benched. Ortiz on the season is at 208. No home runs, 15 RBIs. Ortiz is 33 years old. This is a guy, and again, there are a number of guys who are 30 to 35 or in their mid-30s in the baseball who are struggling mildly. I mean, guys like Maglio, Ordonez, Brian Giles, Derek Lee, to name a few. But Ortiz stands out because this is a guy who, over the course of the last 6 or 7 years, has been the best clutch hitter in baseball. I mean, there's no getting away around it. Nobody since, I say, 2003 has had more clutch hits in the postseason than Ortiz. You remember going back to 2004. When Boston was on that historical comeback against the Yankees, he had back-to-back game-winning RBIs, had the home run in game four, and then had a home run in game four, and then had a single in game five to get the series back to New York, and of course Boston did what they did. It's baffling with Ortiz. I would not think that this guy would just be almost done. And he's coming off seasons where, 2006, he had 54 home runs, 137 RBIs, hit .287, .07, though he didn't play in his main games, hit .332, had 35 home runs, 117 RBIs. Last year he struggled, of course, with some injuries with the wrist, and did not hit the postseason at all. It's clearly carried over to this season. He says he's healthy. he said it was more mental than physical. But Terry Francona had given him the benefit of the doubt for the better part of this season. But at some point, I mean, he had to, you know, take a couple of days off. From my understanding, he probably won't play this weekend. It's hard to figure out what Ortiz. I mean, 33 years old, baseball players, again, have unlike football and unlike basketball, their longevity is a little bit more based on the fact that they're not taking the same physical pounding day in and day out that other sports take, that other athletes take in other sports. So 33 in baseball is not as old as, say, 33 in basketball or 33 in football would be, in football is. Or definitely, forget about tennis. I mean, guys are retired by then. Or even hockey. So that is something to keep your eye on. I'm sure that if this continues on, and if Ortiz has a year where he hits like 19 home runs and only has like 75 RBIs, I don't know if he'll be on the team next year. Listen, Boston, one thing that makes Boston great and makes them probably the best franchise in baseball right now is they are not sentimental by any stretch of imagination. Go ask Pedro Martinez. Go ask Nolan Garcia-Para. They will get rid of a player if they see. I mean, they're similar to like what the New England Patriots are. They will get rid of a player who they think to be on the decline. There's no question about it. And even players who can still play, you know, Derek Lowe, they didn't want to give him an extra year. They thought he was, hey, a little bit older. We got some young pitching. We got some young pitching that's coming up. Cut him loose. And again, Detroit. Boston's farm system is absolutely loaded with young talent. I mean, they have as good a farm system as there is in baseball. I'm certainly one of probably among the top two or three farm systems in all. They have guys coming up left and right. So I would not be surprised if Ortiz was not on the team next year. A couple of little nuggets that this past week in sports, because you have Roger Clemens, you know, who has turned into the master of denial, goes on the Mike and the Mike program, and of course does his usual claims that he never took any steroids, that Brian McNamee never injected him, that the whole book that New York Daily News writers and put out, you know, the Fall of America Icon, and, you know, that's nonsense, and none of it's true. Nobody, Roger's innocent of guilty of nothing. Even though they got his DNA, he's guilty of nothing. He says he doesn't know how they got his DNA. I mean, man, it is amazing with Clemens. I mean, Clemens is, you know what, Clemens gets to a point, and he says Andy Pettit misremembers. That was a funny part, when he says Andy Pettit misremembers. I mean, the crazy thing about Clemens is he's actually making Barry Bonds look good. I mean, he's really making Barry Bonds, because anybody that's covering this case from a media standpoint, with the terms of the federal government, they believe that the federal government has Clemens dead to right, when you compare him to Barry Bonds. Clemens, again, I think he's gotten to a point where Clemens actually believes his own lies. I think Clemens is, you know, you have people out there who lie so much that they start believing that their lies are truths. And Clemens has reached that level. I don't believe that I think Clemens actually believes that nobody ever did inject him with HGH. I really believe that. I don't understand why he even would come on a national program like that. To say what? To say the things that he's been saying for the last couple of years now, or the last few months. So I didn't understand the whole purpose. Nobody, very few people, and anybody with a half a brain would not believe Roger Clemens. Anybody with a half a brain, I mean, come on. The evidence is so ridiculous. It's just not as. It's so overwhelming that it's just, you know, you could be the biggest Roger Clemens fan in the world and still you'd be like, okay, there's a chances are he did use it. So I don't understand that, but again, that's Roger Clemens being Roger Clemens. As far as Mark Cuban had a situation with, of course, Kenyon Martin's mother, where he comes out, and Kenyon Martin's mother said the Dallas Mavericks, the Denver Nuggets are thugs. Mark Cuban says that includes your son, and there you go. With that, of course, that certainly got back to Kenyon Martin. Kenyon Martin, I'll take care of it. And Kenyon Martin wasn't going to do anything physically. I think he approached Mark Cuban, said something to him face to face. Cuban did not go face to face and apologize to Kenyon Martin's mother. He had an opportunity to do so. They said he claimed that he tried to make phone calls through Kenyon Martin's agent and this party and that party. But the bottom line is, hey, go be a man, go walk up to his mother face to face and apologize eye to eye and leave it, and that'd be it. That it would have been done over and done with. Cuban claims that he thought things that he told Kenny Smith this, that he thought that might escalate, the situation would escalate that much more had he done that. I don't believe that. I think people respect you if you deal with them face to face and eye to eye more than a blog. I mean, come on. You apologize over your blog. To me, I mean, that's just, you're just putting information out for your fan base. So, Cuban did a bad job with that. You can't be a professional owner and do something like that. You are a professional owner. You're held to a higher standard than even players are. And we criticize players for going, the whole Ryan Artest thing, going in the stands a few years back in Detroit. He's the owner of a professional, professional sports franchise. Of course, you had Wayman Tisdale passing away. A few months ago, he had his leg amputated, had cancer in his leg, had a cyst that he had to get removed. So he had some problems with that. What I remember Wayman Tisdale, again, he was a very good player, was a solid player in the NBA, had a good career, had a great college career at Oklahoma, as I mentioned, with the three-time All-American. But you just remember, because I've never met him personally, but you remember him being more of a jazz musician than he was a basketball player. And to me, he was a perfect example of a guy who, basketball, he had a talent to play basketball. Okay, when that was over and done with, he moved on to something else. I mean, how many players do you see retire and have a lot of book athletes walking around who retired, turned to drugs, turned to a lot of other negative things because they can't recoup that thrill they had when they were playing sports. That was a problem for Tisdale. I mean, Tisdale, again, retired from basketball, went quietly, and became as better known today as a jazz musician than he was even a basketball player. Came out with about seven or eight CDs, and was a guy who everybody has nothing but good things to say about. So he passes away at the age of 44. Of course, this weekend tomorrow you will have a jam-packed day, two game sevens. Again, I like both home teams. I like the Lakers and the Celtics. I think the Celtics game will be a classic game. I'll say this about the Lakers game. If it's close down the stretch, if it's a one-possession game down the stretch, I think the Rockets will win that game. I really do, but I don't think it will get to that point. I think you will see Denver, Lakers, Cleveland, Boston. Denver, of course, finished off Dallas in that playoff series. Denver has turned the corner. They are definitely a legitimate title contender. I don't think they will win a championship, but they are definitely an improved basketball team. If they were to play the Lakers, I don't like that matchup for them because I just don't think that their defense still could stand up to what the Lakers offense can bring. But who knows? That might not even be the matchup. But I do like what Denver has done with Billups. You have J.R. Smith taking much better shots. They have improved greatly compared to where they were last year. Cleveland, again, continues to roll on. They're right now become the first team in NBA history to start off the postseason with eight straight double-digit wins. It's going to be interesting with Cleveland when they get hit in the mouth. And they're going to get hit in the mouth whether it be conference finals or NBA finals, how they respond. I'm very interested to see that. To me, that would be the next challenge for them. But they're going to get plenty of rest coming up here in the next couple of days as they look to win the win their franchise's first NBA championship. Come back next week where we'll be looking ahead. We'll be looking at the conference finals, in both the NHL and the NBA. I'll look forward to that. Come back next week at our regular normal time at 10:30 a.m. Thanks for tuning in. I'll be back next week on a new and latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Have a great weekend. I'll see you then. See you next week.